All right, welcome back to the Keep Chopping Wood podcast, Big Cat Country Jaguars podcast. Just a reminder that you can tweet at the Big Cat Country account with the hashtag Keep Chopping Wood if you have any comments or anything like that, things that you want to tell us, things that you want us to cover. I'm your host, Bo Jackson. You can follow me on Twitter at Bo Jackson, BeauxJaxson. And I'm joined with the full crew again. I've got Ryan Day, Hank Jones, and Zach Goodall with me again. Please rate and review us on iTunes. For people that don't have iTunes, we're going to be putting it up on SoundCloud too for you children that don't have iPhones or don't like using iTunes or anything like that. And we made it through the first week of practice, guys, the first week in full pads. Thankfully, nobody got hurt. That's probably the best news we can get overall out of anything. But Zach, you've been there pretty much all week, am I correct?
Yeah, I just missed one of the practices.
All right, cool. I'm going to just tee you up right off the bat then. Give us like the three things that have been standing out the most to you so far during camp.
Well, first has been Dante Fowler, and I mean, everyone had their expectations, whether they were low, thinking he's practically a rookie, or if they were high because of all the hype surrounding him, and he didn't fail to disappoint. He's been disrupting the backfield all week in and out of practice. He's even been asking how he can slow down and not hit his teammates, which I thought was hysterical. But he really has been in the backfield the whole time, just making plays and disrupting the offense's flow. Otherwise, I'd say Luke Jokel's actually looked somewhat okay at guard, which is a surprise because at guard you really need to have power and strength, and that's always been his downfall in the league, but he's really looked at least okay at left guard, which has been a surprise. And then my third surprise would probably be Yannick Ngakoue, because whenever Fowler isn't on the field, Ngakoue seems to be, and he's been in the back just as much as Fowler has, and it's surprising to see a rookie come in like that, especially a third rounder, but he's really been great for the pass rush so far during camp.
Yeah, and that's I mean, I'm not there, so I don't get to see anything. I'm just looking at, you know, the random vines that people post or, like, little practice recaps or that the Jaguars put on their website and things like that. But one of the biggest questions that I think I have is how much is this defensive line really improved? I mean, we all want Fowler and all of the rest of the new defensive line additions to, you know, really help turn this defense around. But, like, one of the biggest questions I have, this offensive line was not very good last year. I'm not sure how much or any better it's going to be this year. So I just don't know how much of it is an improvement of the defensive line versus them just going against average to below average players, you know, on the Jaguars roster in training camp. Ryan, you talked a lot about the left guard battle last week. Like, what are your thoughts on this, on that situation in particular, and just the good performance of the defensive line versus what may not be a very good Jaguars offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I thought before pads went on, when it was really early in the practice schedule, that Mackenzie Bernadou really had the inside track. And it was like 30 minutes into the first warm-up that they were like, no, Jokel's the left guard. And even when Beecham is out, they still keep Jokel at left guard and Josh Wells at left tackle. So it's, you know, it looks like it's almost certainly going to be Beecham at left tackle, Jokel at left guard. And I'm still really worried about it. I don't think it's because Jokel's outperformed Bernadou. I just think it's because Bernadou has not been very good. Jokel's thing, as Zach said, has always been strength and power. And Hank was talking earlier before the podcast, you know, when you're playing guard, you're in a phone booth, and it's not going to look pretty when you have someone who struggles with power and strength in a phone booth going up against Muhammad Wilkerson next week. So, I don't like where it's at, but I think Jokel is what we have at left guard for the season.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of going along that, like how the Raiders did with Robert Gallery all those years back when he was just abysmal at tackle, and then they tried to salvage him inside at guard, and he actually ended up being a pretty okay guard. Yeah, I'm interested to see how it ends up working out too, because, like you said, he struggles dealing with power. If you go back and watch the games down the stretch of last season, you saw Terrell Suggs gave him hell. Adrian Claiborne, who's not really a very good pass rusher at all anymore, but he does have power in that Atlanta game, he gave Jokel hell. And then wrapping the season up with J.J. Watt and J.J. Watt's ridiculous performance against him where Jokel just looked absolutely terrible. So, like I said, it is going to be interesting to see what happens there. I think teams are just going to come out. They're going to put a three tech right over his outside shoulder so that they can't slide center help to him. And teams are going to, it's going to be him one on one with really, really good three techs for most of the year. So, I'm not hopeful, but we'll see what happens with that particular situation.
That's kind of like the thing I'm looking forward to the most, like against the Jets. Like, you know, first preseason games are always sloppy and stuff, but we're going to kind of be able to see him against like all different types of defensive tackles kind of right away. You know, Wilkerson, just a good all around three tech. They have Leonard Williams. It would be a good like demonstration for him against that strength, length type. And then I don't know if they still have Sheldon Richardson playing on the edge. Still, they're playing him inside, but if they do put him inside, that's a good, like, him against, like, explosion. So I think we're going to – it's obviously going to take time to adjust, but I think we're going to be able to kind of see early on, like, how it's going to lean. But like you said, they're kind of stuck with it for this year.
Yeah. And now moving on, something that seems to be an annual reoccurrence at this point, not even annual, like – weekly reoccurrence. Marquise Lee, last name spelled LLY, like our good friend Sully, injures his hamstring again, being held out. At what point does it really matter if Lee is there or not? Like, they haven't been able to really rely on him at any point over these last few years since he's been drafted, really. They already paid Allen Hurns. Allen Hurns has got that number two spot locked down for the foreseeable future. Rashad Green might be having a breakout. Like, at what role does Lee have in this offense? Can they even count on him? And does it even matter at this point?
Yeah, honestly, I think, like, the ship on him, on if it matters, if he's on the field or not, kind of sailed last year when, you know, Hurns' his rookie year flashed a lot. And then last year he just took off into, you know, you know this guy's on the field and you're fine. Like, the one time, and like in Lee's career so far, I think he's given you some confidence, is that stretch at the end of his rookie season when A-Rob went down and he got healthy and he got forced onto the field. And he had that one game-winning touchdown against the Giants, I think. He had those two, three good games wrap up the season. And then right when you think he has some momentum going, he went down like the first week of training camp last year. And it's kind of more the same now. And at this point, between A-Rob and Hurns and Thomas and even Green, like, he's not any better than fourth on the pecking order for targets, and he might even be fifth, like, depending on how Green or guys like Walters or Ben are doing in practice. So I think the ship has kind of sailed on if it matters, if he's there or not. As for role, he's going to have a role if he's healthy, because he's just such a different type than every other receiver they have, you know. Like, A-Rob's a big play threat, and he's a big body, and Hurns is a good chain mover, and then Lee is just that quick guy, you know, you send on nine routes down the field. So he's going to have a role if he's healthy, but eventually it's going to be, like, even if he's on the field, how many targets is he going to see? I don't think it's more than a couple, and I think one thing people don't mention, like, enough, like, his rookie contract's already halfway over. Like, next year is going to be that last year in the contract, so at this point, does it really matter, like, with all the other players that have stepped up over him on the pecking order? I don't really think it matters if he sees the field. So if he's there, great. If not, then it's kind of whatever at this point.
Yeah, and I think that was a really good strategy by Caldwell in that particular draft, picking up Hurns in undrafted. I mean, they spent second-round picks on Lee and Allen Robinson. They picked up Hurns in free agency, and then they dipped back into wide receiver again the year after and picking Rashad Green. And I think that's a really good strategy in that you kind of just scatter it. You scatter your investments around, and you kind of just see what cream rises to the top. And then the way that you can kind of justify it, yes, Marquise Lee might very well be a bust, but if you just look at it as Allen Hurns was actually the second round pick and Marquise Lee is the undrafted free agent, and anything you get out of Marquise Lee at this point is just a cherry on top, then it becomes a lot more, it's a much easier pill to swallow, because that position looks like it's already being settled anyways. Keeping on track with the wide receivers, it's basically everything, the number one thing that has been coming out of camp in terms of vines, fans being fired up, the media covering it, it's just happening over and over and over every single day. Allen Robinson is just embarrassing every single defensive back that the Jags have been throwing at him now. Obviously, you know, one-on-ones, those types of drills, those are built for the wide receiver to win, just like how one-on-ones versus offensive line and defensive line, it's built pretty much for the defensive line or rusher to win those battles. But I mean, even when they go into team drills, red zone drills, anything, he's absolutely obliterating everybody. Does it embarrass you guys to see, or I mean, does it, do you see him embarrassing these defensive backs, and does it cause any concern for you, you know, going forward? Like I said, he's dominant, especially, Jalen's been, they've been and even the first day of training camp, it's been the saying has been iron sharpens iron. They're going to put him against Allen Robinson over and over and over, and you know, just kind of let him sink or swim. But do you guys have any concerns for Jalen early in the season, going forward, or is this just a case of Allen Robinson being better than everybody else?
Well, my thing with like Jalen specifically, like if you don't come into this like training camp expecting Jalen to be rough around the edges at first, and I don't really know like what you were expecting, because he's only played corner that 1 year at FSU, and you know, sometimes it was up, sometimes it was down, so you knew he had some work to do. And then he's going against, I mean, off the top of my head, there's not many receivers like you take over A-Rob in the NFL right now. I mean, he's 22 years old, he's reaching that peak, like upper like echelon of NFL receivers, so I don't really see how that's like a concern for Jalen, throwing in a rookie against a guy who's kind of coming into his prime, the elite of the NFL.
Yeah, and Hank, wasn't it you who was saying that, you know, the only concern you'd have is if Jalen succeeded against Allen Robinson?
Yeah.
Because, like you said, I mean, Allen Robinson's in the first tier of receivers in the NFL. If Jalen starts to have success against him, it's not because Jalen is, you know, some wonder kid, some, you know, gifted quarterback. It's because Allen Robinson's struggling.
Yeah, and like I tweeted out the other day, I think it was like the list of receivers Jalen's going to cover this year that are as good as A-Rob, and it's just a blank space. Like when in 6 months, when it's the consensus on football Twitter that A-Rob is better than Hopkins, I hope they remember that I am their father and I started this team.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison that I keep making for Allen has been Larry Fitzgerald, and the reason why. His rookie year, and even going back to his final year at Penn State, when he basically made Hackenberg look like a draftable prospect, he kind of struggled with physicality. He had that ridiculous contested catch ball against the Michigan where he got that horrible tattoo of it put on his ribs. The tattoo is unforgivable, but the play was ridiculous. But overall, his game, especially in his rookie season, was set so much up on making double moves and actually succeeding as an underneath wide receiver and getting himself open, almost like a big wide receiver that's incredibly agile and sets up well on double moves, like Stevie Johnson. And then last year, you see, especially over the course of the season, because I think he really struggled with it against Josh Norman. Josh Norman was able to get physical with him and really bother him. But down the stretch of the season, he really started dealing with physicality well and actually started being a bully back to defensive backs. And that's when you really saw, you know, the downfield passing game to him really open up. So now you have a receiver, like I said, where he succeeds on the underneath stuff as a big wide receiver like Stevie Johnson, and he has the ability to go downfield and just go up over everybody and deal with physicality like an A.J. Green or a Jordy Nelson. And when you combine those two things together, you pretty much have a perfect wide receiver prospect or a perfect wide receiver. Like there's no area of the field that he can't attack and win in at this point. And the best thing about that is even if Blake were to get hurt, I mean, the season would be tanked or whatever, but if you're looking at it from a fantasy perspective or like just how people are going to be perceiving him as a player, he's the type of wide receiver that's going to be able to succeed with any quarterback because, like I said, he can get even guys that, you know, if a quarterback struggles downfield, he can work the underneath game. And if the quarterback, you know, struggles making quick decisions or whatever, and it's just a YOLO ball type quarterback. We saw that he can absolutely succeed in that style too. So there's a completeness to his game now that I think is pretty much unrivaled. As homerific as that makes me sound, I don't really care because, I mean, I just don't see that completeness in a wide receiver's game than what we've seen since like a young Larry Fitzgerald was in the league.
Yeah,
and go ahead.
There's that one stat. It was like since 1970, players 22 or younger with 14 receiving touchdowns, and it's Moss, Gronk, and then Allen Robinson. Oh, that's just crazy to think. Like he's already like statistically, he's so young. He's already kind of in that group.
And Bo, I like your comparison to Fitzgerald because I'm sure you watched the All or Nothing with the Cardinals season, and something they featured in the documentary, which I didn't know because I didn't pay a ton of attention to the Cardinals during the regular season, was that they moved Fitzgerald around and they put him, at the X, Y, and Z receiver spots. And so, like you're saying, Robinson can play any of those spots. He can play, within the scheme in a ton of different ways. Underneath, he can, go over you. So, like Fitzgerald, he's so physically gifted that he can attack you in, nearly infinite ways.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if he's ever going to be the blocker that Fitzgerald has developed into, because that's part of what has kept Fitzgerald's career going so well in Arizona under Bruce Arians. They're basically using him as like that Hines Ward slot receiver, almost like a blocking tight end at times. And I don't, like I said, I don't know if Allen is ever going to develop in that way, but we're still so far away from him slowing down and having to be used that way that he's going to dominate for a very, very long time, especially when you consider just how young he is. It's incredible. Zach, basically the last topic that we have to go over training camp observations and things like that. What's going on with Miles Jack and his playing time? We know he pauses, starting at middle linebacker. I don't really see him being taken off the field too much for various reasons, and I'll let you kind of get into that. But how is that rotation going? How are they splitting those reps? And what do you see for Miles' playing time, early in the season and then down the stretch of the season?
Well, what I've seen from Miles is that he's picked up the game really, really quickly, a lot faster than most players would, especially considering, what he dealt with his knee last year. You'd wonder if he's still rehabbing it all. But he's just come out on the field and immediately made an impact, Of course, he's going to struggle a bit at the start, but that didn't last very long. He's been getting second-team reps the majority of camp, besides when Paws had a veteran day off. But Miles was out there, and he looks fast, especially in his run coverage. And I actually got to speak to him. I got in a little trouble for it, but I didn't care. Where he was telling me that he thought his pass game was better than his run game. But so far, all I've seen is that he's been all over the field stopping the run, which is something he was – under the radar really good at UCLA because he was always praised for his pass coverage, but he's looked good at both. Like I said, run game has been his strong suit so far, but he's picked up in pass coverage. During the season, I see Paws getting pulled off on third downs when they bring in a nickel defensive back and then they run maybe Telvin and Miles down on third downs for linebackers, and he will kind of cover the outside, in the flats in that area, because that's just what he's good at. And you can see that during camp. You could see that during the scrimmage last night. Even when he's just running against the second team, like, he looks like a starter when he's out there. So he'll get a lot of playing time. I think he's going to get more than people expect, but Paws is still their guy. The team's really high on Paws as well. So I expect Paws to get the majority of the reps as the season goes on, but slowly Miles is really going to work his way onto the field, and he's been showing that in camp.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to me to see how that rotation works out. I don't know if they're ever going to really pull Paws unless they give they're going to have to give, probably if they do that, they're going to have to give Telvin the green dot to where he gets the communications from the defensive coordinator, and you have Telvin being the one to set the front and everything, because you can't have two green dots on the field at the same time. So it's going to be like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. So I don't know if he's ever going to be a base starter. I think one of the beat writers, I don't remember who said that they expect him to rotate with Telvin earlier. So it's, but yeah, pass coverage is absolutely the thing that he does well and is renowned for. Like you brought up, he is very, very underrated in the run game. Didn't really get to showcase a ton of that at UCLA just because of his kind of weird usage. They didn't play him as a true linebacker, you know, until his final year. So you only got two or three, really just one game, the Virginia game, of seeing him do that type of stuff. Because after that, against the spread teams, they started pulling him back out of the box again. So he doesn't really have any experience setting the defense or anything like that. But something that you did mention, how well he's performed in the run game in practice, I think that kind of makes sense. And it's something that kind of got glossed over in the pre-draft stuff, is that this dude played running back for a long time. I mean, he was UCLA's best running back as a freshman, so he understands.
He had like 10 touchdowns or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was a ridiculous, yeah. ridiculous running back. He might be the Jaguars' best yeah. running back if you line him up right there, to be completely honest. But I think that helps in that he understands run game concepts. He might not be very far along in terms of, like I said, being able to set the defense and make checks, adjusting the coverages in the front based on what the offense is doing. But in terms of seeing what the offensive line is doing and the kind of run game concepts that that an offense would want to run, it seems like it would be a very natural and instinctual thing for him from playing that position.
Yeah, and one thing you said with subbing some linebackers off. One thing with Telvin is that I've realized, at least watching his film, is that he actually does struggle with when Paws isn't on the field and they don't have the veteran calling the plays. One guy I could see actually getting subbed off with Telvin and Paws would be bringing Jack in and bringing Jordan Tripp in, because Tripp has been a delight to watch. He's been awesome. He's been calling plays with the second team, helping Miles. He can play will linebacker. He can play middle. He can even play a little auto, but I won't get into auto. He's been one of the coach's favorites as well. He's really under the radar. You can see that last year, and I forget what game he started, but he knows the defense very well, and I expect them to use him a lot. I could see him brought in with Miles on nickel packages. Obviously not all the time, because they want Telvin and Paws out there, but that kind of package, whether it be in a nickel, even a dime package, or something of the sort, if they can bring that in, I think Tripp is a valuable asset to helping Miles, along with Paws and the rest of the linebacker core.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be really fun to see how that linebacker group shakes out. I mean, a couple of years ago, there were basically no bodies there. It was Paws and a bunch of guys, and now
Russell Allen,
Geno Hayes. So, I mean, they've slowly been adding talent to that unit, and they've got some guys who can run now. So, I know people bang on Paws, they hate Paws, but the thing that I always come back to is just look. The run defense was solid all year for the most part, and a lot of that is what he's doing pre-snap. And just look at what happened in the game that he missed against Tampa Bay. It was, the run defense was just a complete disaster. It was straight up bad.
That's why I kind of like buy. I think it was Ryan O who, like you mentioned, was talking about, like, it might be Miles and Paws on third down, and people were like freaking out. They were like, "Why would you leave Paws in and take Telvin off?" But every time Paws like came off the field, like you mentioned, everything just kind of went to hell. So I think that's more like probable than anything. Like Paws and Miles seemed to feel together more than Miles and Telvin, at least early on.
Yep. And so for our final segment, this is going to be a weekly segment for us. It's called the Hankstead Award, named after our co-host Hank. Hanksing it is something that when something goes terribly, terribly awry, and it is 100% your fault and your responsibility. I don't have any. Like I said, I haven't been at practice or anything like that. But you guys have all been way more observant and keeping up with it than I have. So, and Hank, I believe that you did this as part of your weekly write-ups for Big Cat Country, didn't you? Okay, so this is the audio continuation of that. So do you want to lead us off? Who is your Hankstead Award specialist for this week?
Well, when we were thinking about this pod, my whole idea was to make it Werner, of course, Hankstead, because I'm an FSU fan. My last, like, 4 or 5 years, I've had the struggle of knowing Werner played for my favorite college team, just his staying on the NFL as a pass rusher. I think him and Dante Fowler had the same amount of sacks last year or something like that. when the when they signed him, you know, all those homers were like, oh, he's coming to a 4-3 defense. He, you know, might make a transition as a pass rusher. And I just, you know, being the person I am, I wanted to kind of dash their hopes and dreams and remind them that he's terrible. And then, so this whole training camp, I've kind of been laughing every time a beat writer says, yeah, you know, Werner hasn't done a single thing. Every practice, you can't even tell he's out there. And then last night, I'm reading through the Twitter, and I just see, like, 20 tweets. Luke Jokel just got beat for a sack by Bjorn Werner. And so I'm just going to just go ahead and give it to Luke. Left tackle dream is dead, buddy. You got beat by Werner. You might as well throw Mioscioli out there. It's just, it's dead.
Yeah, when you're a potential Hankst it guy and you Hankst it to somebody else, that's not a good look.
It's like a paragram of Hankses.
Ryan, what about yourself?
I'm going to go with another offensive lineman, but it's going to be Bernadou. Like I said before, he, for all intents and purposes, he had the inside track to left guard, and then he gave it up to Jokel. So, again, another case of a potential Hankstead candidate passing it on. So, yeah, Mackenzie Bernadou, my Hankstead award.
It's like a rabbit hole of Hankses.
And, Zach, go ahead and wrap us up with whoever Hankst it for you.
Well, my Hankstead award will probably go to Jason Myers, because last year, if you look at his stats and everyone was hating on him, I mean, he had a higher field goal percentage than he had extra point percentage, and people were expecting him to, you know, pick it up this year, considering the team kept him around and didn't go after anyone in the draft or free agency. But then last night, he nearly missed another extra point, and he did miss about a 52-yard field goal, whereas power in his leg has always been his big thing, so I would expect him to make a field goal like that, and he missed it badly. Whereas Sam Ficken, the guy they brought in, I believe he was undrafted out of Penn State, hit a really long field goal and has looked really good in camp. So everyone had high expectations for Myers to look better this year, and he hasn't. So, yeah, I'd give him my Hankstead Award.
Just go for two every time.
Yeah, that might be the best strategy. But you know what, too? Hank and Zach, you probably don't remember this, but Ryan will. This is pretty much an exact parallel of how Josh Scobie's career started off. Scobie was terrible for his first couple of years, missing everything. Basically, the only reason they were keeping him on the roster is because he could kick it out of the back of the end zone on kickoffs. But a couple years down the line, he ends up, you know, becoming one of the best kickers in the league. I think really we just got to tell Myers that if he hits long field goals, he can use the Gatorade cooler as a keg. And then, I think we might be okay in that situation, because dude is probably the biggest bro on the team. It's between him and Blake. Our kicker gets down, man.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and that's pretty much all that we got for you guys this week. Thank you for listening, for checking us out again. We'll be back next week. We'll have takes on the preseason. Hopefully it's a good game, but it could very well turn into an abortion. We'll see what happens against the Jets. Please.
I completely forgot. We're going to see Hackenberg versus the Jaguars in a football game.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, that will be fun. There's a very good chance that a lot of interceptions are going to be thrown in this game. Go ahead and please subscribe and review us on iTunes. Like I said, you'll be able to check us out on SoundCloud with this episode. Tweet the Big Cat Country handle with the hashtag #KeepChoppingWood for any suggestions or comments or anything like that. And please, if you're a sponsor and you want us to shill something, we'll shill pretty much anything. I sell people things that are bad for them every single day, so I have no problem selling whatever your product is to people. And once again, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Bo Jackson, with Hank Jones, Ryan Day, and Zach Goodall. And listen to us next week.